This is Windows Observer Launch Control. We are just seconds away from the start of the Observe Tech podcast. Stand by for final sequencing and launch. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we have launch of the Observe Tech podcast. Keeping an eye on Windows and other things tech, here is your host, Richard Hay of WindowsObserver.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 120 of the Observe Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Rich Hay from WindowsObserver.com, here with you early on a Monday morning, the 24th of February. It's just after 7 a.m. here on the East Coast, and we just woke up and checked the news and stuff and caught up with some of the latest announcements out of Mobile World Congress over in Barcelona, Spain. And the big one is, of course, Nokia and their news conference, which was about 5.5 hours ago. And some news out of there confirming their Android phone, a little bit different than your typical Android. We're going to talk about that, and I got a link to a lot of stories about that new phone that's coming out. Start off by reminding everybody, though, that we are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's there, so check out techpodcast.com. And I want to remind everybody the giveaway we started last week. It's a Western Digital TV live media player. There's a post on the site. All you got to do is comment on how you would use it. And then once I get a good collection of comments there, I am going to put it together, make a drawing, a random one, and then give that away to somebody so they can have that and have an opportunity to try it out and stream stuff live over Wi-Fi to their TV, their monitor, any HDMI device. And then also, last week I mentioned to you that I was waiting on the delivery of a Western Digital MyCloud device. I decided to go with the 3 terabyte version and to see if it would feasibly replace a Windows Home server setup. As I mentioned in last week's show in episode 119, I made the move back to Windows Home Server 2011 from Windows Server Essentials 2012 because I just found that 2012, Windows Server Essentials 2012 just had so many roadblocks into me getting access to my data. With Windows Home Server 2011, when I set up a map network drive, it works every time. I don't have to put credentials back in. And I did fight that and fight that and fight that with Windows Server Essentials. So I'm glad to be back on Windows Home Server 2011. But I decided I wanted to see if there was an alternative to running a full box because the primary use of my Windows Home Server 2011 is a file server. It's my historical archive. It holds my music, my photos, and of course it does all the backups for all the computers here in the house. So I decided to give it a shot. I did write a post earlier in the week about my first impressions with the device, and I do like it. It's an easy setup. My post about that talks about how easy it is to set up, and I'm real happy with that initial experience. A couple days ago, I wrote up a follow-up to that about how it works with DLNA, which is the media streaming to different devices that are compatible with DLNA. And specifically for me, that's my Xbox 360 and, of course, other computers in the house. And I was very easily able to access a few albums I stuck on the drive on my Xbox 360. I was able to access them on Windows Media Player on one of my Windows 8.1 machines, but had a bit of a problem with Xbox Music. It didn't recognize the server. And when I tried to add the directory as one of the places to look for music, it refused to let me because it said that place could not be indexed. So not 100% sure what all of that is caused by. It's stuff I will continue to look into. I did install the Western Digital SmartWare, which is their backup solution, and it works fine when the machine is turned on. It will not wake the machine up out of a sleep like Windows Home Server does to do the backup and then let it shut back down into its sleep mode based on its power settings. So that was disappointing because I tell you what I love about Windows Home Server 2011 is the fact that it's fire and forget. Once I got that thing turned on, guess what? The backups happen every day unless a problem occurs, and I'll get alerted to that. So I was really disappointed about the lack of the wake-up call to do the backup. And there was no catch-up when I turned it back on and everything started running again. It didn't pop up and say, oops, we missed a backup. Should we do it now? So I don't know whether that will improve or not. That's a piece of the software that is involved in that. I did like the interface to the SmartWare. It was easy to read. It was easy to understand what was what I was doing and what places I could back up and where I could back it up to. But still a little bit lacking when it comes to that kind of automatic, it's working in the background on its own. So we'll continue to have that device plugged into our network. I really do like the format. It plugs into I got it plugged in through its gigabit Ethernet port, which I have gigabit Ethernet network here in the house, and it's a fast access. It's easily accessible on all my devices. There's a Windows Phone app called WD2Go, and I can easily access stuff, upload stuff from my phone. Kind of weird that when you upload a photo from, when I upload a photo from my Windows Phone, it changes the name to WD_JPG instead of keeping the name that's on my phone. That was a little bit strange, but cryptic names on the phone anyway, so it really doesn't matter a lot. And my camera roll is already automatically backed up to OneDrive, so it's not that I need it, but it's just a handy feature to have in case I wanted to upload that copy somewhere else or something of that nature. Then, of course, yesterday, the kind of pre-Mobile World Congress stuff started to happen, and I just realized I typed that wrong in a headline I did on the site. I wrote up a post about Microsoft pre-WMC. It really should be MWC Press Conference News Tidbits and Roundup, and I got linked to a lot of the initial blog post about the press conference Microsoft held yesterday, talked about a lot of different things. It was Joe Belfiore, who is the vice president of the Windows Operating System Division. We know him. He used to be the Windows Phone guy, and now he's also involved in Windows. So it was quite convenient that one guy up on stage was able to not only talk about Windows Phone, but about Windows 8.1. And he basically confirmed that Windows 8.1 Update 1 is coming. I think we're going to see that initial build, maybe a preview at Build at the beginning of April. And a lot of people seem to think Windows Phone 8.1 will be seen there, but there was not a confirmation about 8.1 in the same way that Update 1 to Windows 8.1 was confirmed. So some numbers, though, some interesting numbers did come out of that, specifically about Windows Phone. 4 billion app downloads in the Windows Phone Store, from the Windows Phone Store. 245,000 apps in the store, with about 500 to 600 being added each day. I've seen two different numbers there. 12 million store transactions daily. 55 carrier billing agreements in 34 markets. That means you can pay for apps via your phone and your phone account. A 390% increase in app downloads since Windows Phone 8 was released. And a 440% increase in monthly paid app revenue since Windows Phone 8 was released. And then one other thing is that it's believed, based on comments Joe Belfiore made when he was talking about Windows 8.1 Update 1, is that we might see Windows 9 sooner rather than later. And we'd already heard the rumors that next spring, Mary Jo Foley specifically broke that rumor, if I remember right, that we will see Windows 9 sometime early next year that will incorporate a lot of the changes that we're seeing in Windows 8.1 Update 1, which is making it a more desktop-centric OS, or at least the menus and things like that, more familiar to what we know in the desktop. So lots to be watching about Windows Phone and Windows 8.1. Now, last night, as I mentioned at the kickoff of the show, Nokia held their press conference about 5.5 hours ago, and as expected, they announced their Android X, which is a Nokia Lumia phone, or Nokia phone, that is running a version of Android that's had all the Google bits and services stripped out and been replaced with Microsoft services like OneDrive, Skype, and things of that nature. Interesting concept, lots of different colors. It's really targeted towards the lower-end market, kind of like the Nokia Lumia 520, 521, and those 620, and those phones like that. It's a 1 gigahertz processor. It's got 1 gig of RAM, I think, if I remember reading correctly. And it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of grabs a hold. So I've got several stories linked on the show notes about the Nokia X, about the announcement. What does it mean for Nokia? What does it mean for Microsoft? Of course, in the press conference yesterday, Joe Belfiore was asked about, you know, what does Microsoft think about Nokia possibly releasing an Android phone? And he stated the fact that, one, they're both independent companies right now. Nokia is not part of Microsoft. They can't work together like they are because that's part of the antitrust stuff until the transaction is closed for the purchase of Nokia. And he also made a comment to the effect of, yeah, we're happy, you know, we're thrilled about some things and not so much about others. Well, interestingly enough, after Nokia made their official announcement this morning, a blog post showed up on the official Microsoft blog from Frank Shaw, who's the corporate vice president for communications, you know, the PR guy there. And he talks about that very thing in his blog post. And he makes it clear and to kind of, I think, try to clean that up a little bit and the viewpoint and the assumptions that are being made. He talks about the announcements that was held yesterday, and he references Joe Belfiore's blog post about the announcements yesterday, but he also talks about Nokia's press conference today, and he says, yep, they announced Nokia X, which will compete with Android devices in the affordable smartphone category and introduce the Microsoft Cloud to a new set of customers in growth markets. And then he says there's been lots of speculation about what this announcement means for Microsoft and about our pending acquisition of Nokia's device and services division. And he makes a couple points. First, the transaction with Nokia is not yet closed, like I said, so they operate as two independent companies. So Nokia had no obligation to tell Microsoft what they were doing there with Nokia X phone. Secondly, they're pleased to see Microsoft services like SkyDrive, Skype, Outlook.com being introduced on those devices. It provides an opportunity to bring millions of people, particularly in growth markets, into the Microsoft family. So, you know, that may be PR speak. That may be just, you know, it is what it is. We can't do much else. But there's a point to be made of getting those services in the hands of folks on these low-end devices. Not everybody buys a Nokia Lumia 920, 1020, 1520, 1320, or high-end phones, and so you've got to get in that market somehow. So why not get in there with your services, even if it is on a slightly modified Android platform? So it's good to see that happening. Lots of stories to be read there about all of Nokia's news from Mobile World Congress, so make sure you check out those links. Another list of articles written about Microsoft's new CEO, Satya Nadella. Some commentary about, again, that new role. There's a great interview available, and you can read more about, this is like his first official interview outside of that walk-around video that he and Steve Clayton did the day he was announced as the CEO. So you get a little more in-depth and background. I even linked to a post by J.D. Meyer from his MSDN blog that talks about Satya Nadella being about customer focus, employee engagement, and changing the world. So you can read those stories about Satya Nadella. In the Windows front, we know the big story late last week, was Microsoft was supposedly going to cut Windows prices by about 70% to OEMs to kind of get in that low-end market where Android and iOS is doing so well at. Well, it was basically confirmed that is the case. And so basically what that means is if a manufacturer builds and markets and sells a device for less than $250, they only have to pay $15 for the Windows licensing on that device. And this isn't Windows RT. This is regular straight-up Windows 8.1 that would run on any laptop or desktop. I did do a story about that I thought it was a bad idea to drop it per device. And you can see the post. I referenced several devices that are out there right now that are close to that price point or those kind of the low-end specs for Windows 8.1 devices. And what concerns me is will OEMs be able to build a solid device that is not doesn't run slow, that it will run the OS well and be functional and to get in under that price barrier so they can get that $15 per device licensing fee. And that's my only concern. Just remember a few years ago, OEMs, you know, laptops that were not built well, it wasn't the laptop that was blamed for the poor performance. It was Windows that was blamed for the poor performance most of the time. And so we can't afford in this day and age of dwindling PC purchasing and different devices taking over the role of an active device for people and how people consume and create information, we can't afford for people to be continuing to point at Windows as the issue when sometimes it is the hardware. And OEMs are going to cut corners. They're going to be frugal when it comes to these things in order to maximize their revenue. And although it's great that they get $15 per device, can we get the specs properly kind of combined for the right mix that gives good performance yet a good price point? It concerns me. I don't know that it can be done, because when you look at the current slate of devices, let's say 8 or 10-inch tablets, there's only a handful that get in under $300 even, and none get close to $250 unless they're on a really heavy-duty price cut. So we're going to be keeping an eye on that for a few weeks and see what happens there. A big reminder on the Windows front, with Windows XP's expiration coming up in about 5 weeks or so on April 8th, is that XP, there's a lot of talk about XP-based embedded systems like ATMs and things of that nature. Embedded systems with Windows XP is actually getting supported until 2019. So all that, the claims that, ATMs were going to be vulnerable due to the drop of support is not true when it comes to the embedded system side of the house with Windows XP. And then another big announcement from Nokia, Hear Maps, the very popular apps that we have on Nokia Lumia devices and now on other devices as well, it's no longer an exclusive, are coming to Windows 8.1 devices. That means these are going to compete directly with Bing Maps if you use Google Maps on your device, but we're going to be seeing Hear Maps arrive on Windows 8.1 devices, which I think is great because it's a very solid mapping system. Speaking of Nokia, let's talk a little bit of more Windows Phone stuff. Last week, the Nokia Lumia Icon began selling. I really like the concept of this device. And as I wrote in my post about this last week, the Nokia Lumia Icon is to video in the way that the Nokia Lumia 1020 was to photography with that 41-megapixel camera. They are really focusing the Icon on video and sound capture. It's got like 4 mics, beautiful camera on it. It takes good photos too, but it's really being pushed and focused on as a video device. Like I said, just the same way the 1020 was all about the camera. So that is a launch. That is a Verizon exclusive. It's the Verizon flagship Windows phone. And so far, I've seen mixed reviews about it. It's kind of the typical, atypical stuff that you do see about that. Some are thrilled with it. Some aren't happy at all. Some think it's a poor mix, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that's nothing new. We've seen that all the time when it comes to Windows Phone and Windows Phone devices that get launched. We also have seen stories come out that it does look like all the rumors about Cortana, which is a Siri-like voice assistant for Windows Phone, is coming. More and more evidence of that is popping up, so there's a couple stories out there about that. Big updates on the Windows Phone App Studio beta website, which allows you to develop an app for Windows Phone through the web. I've actually created a couple for Windows Phone, one called ISS Passes and one called ISS Jacks, that allows you to see when the International Space Station is going to be overhead in some certain locations. And the first time I logged in after this beta released, it converted all my apps over to the new format. It apparently makes it very easy to take that same app and save a Windows 8.1 project for it, so that you can release it to the Windows Store as well. I have not done that yet. I need to update those things so I can do that. But those apps continue to be very popular, and that App Studio really can get you going very well in learning the development side of Windows Phone. So it's a great, great UI, and it's a great system to be able to use to get started with. OneDrive app for Windows Phone arrived. Last week the official name change occurred. SkyDrive is now OneDrive, although there's lots of places you're still going to see SkyDrive, both on Windows Phone, in the Windows OS. Like I suspect, Windows Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1 Update 1 will probably bring the overall name changes throughout the OS. That this app for Windows Phone is actually already labeled OneDrive. Quick access to my cloud storage on SkyDrive, SkyDrive. I even do that in the store when I'm talking to customers. It's OneDrive, very quick access to my OneDrive stuff, and very easy to use, and it's a really nice-looking app. They've done a lot of improvements and changes to it, so that has come out. Spotify just announced this morning at Mobile World Congress, Spotify is overhauling their Windows Phone app and will release it this spring, which is way, way overdue. And then Nokia also announced that BlackBerry's BBM, their BlackBerry Messenger, is coming to Lumia devices. So even though BlackBerry seems to be a device that is heading down the tubes, that BlackBerry Messenger must be very popular, because if for Nokia to take the time to bring that to their Lumia devices. So that is coming. In the cloud side of the world, we already mentioned OneDrive is now live, so the switch has occurred. We'd seen earlier the week before that they were using the new URL shortener with the number one DRV instead of MSDRV or SDRV. So that's occurring. There's an IT user panel coming up on Microsoft Cloud Technologies, and they're looking for you IT professionals to set in on that and provide feedback on that. So I got a link to that story for you as well. On the Xbox front, Microsoft opened up a new Twitter account called Xbox Store that will be sharing gaming deals. Normally, we see that from Larry Herb, a.k.a. Major Nelson on Windows or Xbox Live. But that is a new account, slowly been picking up speed with followers. Didn't get a lot of coverage in the tech press. I'm not sure why, but it certainly seems to be a valid account out of Redmond, and it's purely talking about gaming deals that are happening each day for the platform, and not just Xbox One, but also Xbox 360. On the Office side of the house, it's actually been a year since Office 365 released, and there's a great post about how that's going along for Microsoft. Last week, the day after the SkyDrive to OneDrive announcement was made, the suspected renaming, rebranding of Office web apps occurred, and now it's known as Office Online. The office.com site changed over, became a portal to all those services, and now you see a new app bar when you're in Outlook.com that connects you to those other elements of not only SkyDrive. It's going to take a while to not say SkyDrive anymore. I'm telling you what, that is embedded in my head. OneDrive, as well as the now Office Online apps such as Word Online, Excel Online, PowerPoint Online, and OneNote. OneNote's always been online. But it's interesting to see those changes. They're great-looking interfaces. I mean, you almost can't tell you're not in the full-blown app. And if you've got to edit something on the go real quick, it's going to let you get the job done. And you don't have to worry about having the most recent version of Office on the device or on the machine you're on. Right around that one-year birthday for Office 365, message encryption has been rolled out, and that's rolling out around the world. So you can go check that out if you need to enable messages, emails to be encrypted in your enterprise. OneNote and OneDrive, there was a good blog post from the OneNote team talking about how OneNote and OneDrive are now integrated. There was an update for the Windows Store OneNote app that integrated OneDrive into it right now and helps you more easily access your OneNote notebooks. So that update is out. There's a good story from Mary Jo Foley about the next versions of Office for Windows and Mac. I mean, 2013 just released, but I guess it's already time to be thinking about the betas of those. The expectation is that those are going to be the touch first versions. And maybe we'll start seeing those maybe this year, or maybe we'll hear something at Build. I don't know. I think Build's really going to be focused on Windows Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1 Update 1. So who knows when the next version of Office is coming out, but folks are looking for it and suspecting that we should be seeing it soon. And a good post from ZDNet also about Office being the one thing that can kill a Chromebook. I think we mentioned in last week's podcast that Google was going to be streaming Windows functionality to Chromebooks, looking for a way to continue to convince enterprises that the Chromebook is a decent device to put on employees' desks to be able to use. But the reality is they need Windows. They need Windows compatibility. They need Office. And that's not possible with the Chromebooks the way they are right now, which is why we're hearing about this streaming services. That's got to be costing Google a bomb to be able to do that, because it requires licensing and things of that nature. So I will tell you, from my retail perspective, Chromebooks are not going out the door in the same pace that laptops are. And especially the low-end laptops, the sub-$400 laptops, are going out the door way more often than Chromebooks are. It's just the reality. Microsoft Surface on the hardware side saw an interesting tweet that Super Bowl winning quarterback Russell Wilson from the Seattle Seahawks got himself a Surface and was getting set up with one. There is already evidence that the Microsoft is releasing their first LTE-capable Surface tablet. It's going to be Surface 2, apparently. And that device went through the Federal Communications Commission to get checked out and verified and okayed for sale. So that is going to be a big deal, I think. I'm not sure who's going to carry it. Not sure the details of it, but we do know that something went through the FCC to get approved. And there's a couple stories about that in the show note links as well. On the social media side, of course, everybody heard the story about WhatsApp. $19 billion paid by Facebook for it. They claim they will keep the messaging service independent from Facebook. There was a story this morning that says WhatsApp is now going to add voice messaging services to its functionality in the coming months. Sounds like it's turning into a bit of a Skype-type service. So we'll be watching that and keeping an eye out. Of course, on my Twitter, I saw Robert Scoble shortly after this acquisition by Facebook, who said he was not going to use WhatsApp anymore, says it just doesn't meet his needs, and he talked a little bit about that, and it may be yours too. So that's why I linked to the story, because Robert Scoble always has a unique perspective on the tech stuff. Facebook also made some policy changes. It will no longer change the privacy settings on someone who is deceased. They're going to keep them the same way. I guess in the past they used to open them up or give others access to those things. So that's going to be a policy that they will enforce and not change. And then my favorite Twitter app, Tweetium app for Windows, now has been updated to 2.0.3, which not only does some bug fixes and performance enhancements, but you can now see the Twitter app that people are using to tweet with. And so it gives you that capability to kind of know what people are talking on. The app continues to be well-developed, well-documented. Brandon Paddock, the developer from B-Side Software who used to work for Microsoft, he's building Tweetium app, and he's building in a process to not only, you know, $3 is cheap and inexpensive for this kind of a quality app, this kind of a well-developed app. And I have ranted before on this show about people moaning about paying $3 for a good app. It's a good app. Go pay $3 for it, okay? But he's also doing his pro subscription. And there are going to be features that are pro only. And his goal in the subscription side, which is a little different than the norm, is that he will continue to have a revenue stream when he hits the Twitter token limit. And guess what? Tweetium is picking up so much momentum, it is going to hit the Twitter token limit, the 100,000 user limit. But he is preparing for that. His intent is the pro subscriptions will continue to be able to support him developing and keeping up with Tweetium app. Whereas so many other developers of Twitter apps, some that were pretty decent on the platform at Windows 8, abandoned their apps. You don't see updates from them anymore. I mean, when is the last time you saw an update on some of those old apps that have hit those limits? So I think he's got a plan in place. And as long as users support that plan, and ultimately it's your choice. I get that. But you know what? Paying a few bucks for a good app is not a problem. And how do you expect a developer to make a living anyway? That's what they do. Some miscellaneous items that hit the news this past week. I got a great couple links to this whole Netflix Comcast thing. You know, there's two sides to this story. Many people believe that it means there's no more net neutrality. It means the highest bidder gets to pay for the best service. Then there's others who, there's another post by Dan Rayburn on Stream and Media Blog that explains that this is about access that they were already paying for, and it's kind of like moving from one content developer distribution network to another, and that it's not about preferential treatment. You got to read both sides. You got to make the decision for yourself. I got to admit, I was on the side of this is horrible because it looks like the highest bidder gets to pay for the best service. And what if your service doesn't have the kind of, you know, deep pockets like Netflix does to be able to pay? Does that mean you're going to suffer? Because if users pay a single subscription fee, they should expect the same level of service. And if you're not on Comcast, what does that mean for your Netflix streaming? You know, if you're on Comcast and you get Netflix, should you pay more? So read both stories. You're eventually going to have to form your own opinion. I'm kind of in the middle here. This is something I'm going to continue to watch and observe and see how that impacts things, because, you know, we can have our initial reactions to deals like this, and it creates a lot of tech headlines on both sides. But ultimately, in the long run, is it or isn't it what we think it is only going to come by watching. Want to mention a new website about Metro apps that has come online. It's called MetroAppSauce.com. They are starting to feature all the Metro apps, a very uniquely designed site, so go check it out. Samsung is opening up their retail expansion, much like the Microsoft stores inside of Best Buy's. They are going to open up more Samsung Experience style stores in Best Buy. So there's a new partnership, retail partnership going on there. And the big news this past week in wearables are becoming extremely popular these days, and the Fitbit is one of the devices that has become extremely popular, and it's got all kinds of devices. I know in our store, it's become bigger and bigger. People are coming in to see that stuff all the time, and the high-end Fitbit Force is a very popular device because of its functionality. Well, Fitbit announced this past weekend that they are recalling 100% of the Force devices due to rashes that customers are reporting. Now, apparently the number of rashes being reported is less than 2% of the user base for the device. But if you do a search on Google or Bing and you look up Fitbit Force rashes, you'll see some interesting pictures there. But they have decided to recall them all, give 100% refund to the customers, and try to figure out what's going on. And there's a post at the Fitbit support website from the CEO who talks about this thing, says that they use standard stuff that's been used in other products in the device, in the rubber of the wristband. He says it could be that. It could be the surgical steel of the device. Could be any number of things. I mean, I've even had discussions with people that maybe it's partly caused by the user who wears that thing all the time, gets water in between, moisture in between, doesn't take it off, and it causes a skin rash. It seems like a real low number of people with the rash, but I'm not denying that it's happening to people. So Fitbit probably doing the right thing in the eyes of the consumer by doing the recall and trying to figure out what was going on and then maybe re-release the device. Personally, I have a Fitbit Zip, which runs on a watch battery, 4 to 6 months. Doesn't have to be plugged into the computer ever to charge it or to sync it. It's wirelessly synced when I get close to my computer, and it helps keep track of all the things I do each day stepwise, and calorie burning and distance covered. So for me and my wife, that works great, and so I don't need anything else other than that. So it's an interesting week that's starting up here. We got Mobile World Congress going on over the next couple days. And, of course, we're getting closer to build and the release of Windows 8.1 Update 1 this spring, as well as Windows Phone 8.1, which it sounds like all Windows Phone 8 devices are going to get. Lots and lots of news going on as we get closer to those launches. We get closer to Nokia becoming a part of Microsoft and not an independent company. And we will continue to be watching all that stuff for you and sharing it with you via Twitter. You can catch me at WinOBS. And of course, you can see me at WindowsObserver.com for the website and on Facebook at WindowsObserver.com as well. So until next week, stay safe, keep your system up to date, take care.